Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Aaron Greenwood, who's currently senior writer at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, formerly animal journalist extraordinaire. She was the animal welfare editor at Huffington Post and a regular contributor to the Washington Post, the Today Show website, The Dodo, among many others. She's also a novelist, animal-oriented stories, typically. And related to some or all these things, her Facebook page is a must-visit destination if you care about animals and animal issues. She often highlights shelter issues and pioneering programs at some of those shelters across the country. Adoptable dogs and cats with hard luck stories and plenty of whimsical pieces that grab her fancy, as well as dogs, manatees, and otters that live near where she does. So I expect a freewheeling conversation about all sorts of news stories, large and small, certainly including the 300-plus dogs seized from a breeder right here in Tampa earlier this week, and winding up in the already overtaxed, overcrowded Hillsborough County Pet Resources Facility. Aaron and I plan to incorporate your calls, emails, and texts into the conversation, inviting you to both comment on topics we bring up and to raise topics that are on your mind. And since Aaron is here in the studio with me, we'll be streaming this conversation. In fact, we already are on Facebook Live. That can be found on my personal Facebook page, Duncan Strauss. Later on in today's program, I'll speak with Asia Nakia, founder of an organization called Compassion Kind, which has played a central role in rescuing animals, for example, in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, and in the Bahamas after Dorian's devastation. She's also the producer of Lynchpins of Dead Dog Island, one of two documentaries being screened October 5th at Jimmy B. Kiel Regional Library in Tampa. Also, I'm practically constitutionally obligated to mention that WMNF's Fall Fun Drive starts 1 week from today, and I've been assigned a hefty fundraising goal of $3,200, a gigantic amount, especially to try to raise in an hour-long show. To meet that goal, it's crucial that I receive some early pledges. Maybe you could help me out that way by dropping a donation in the Talking Animal tip jar, which you can find on WMF.org under the schedule spot for Talking Animals. And I also, as usual, have some exclusive thank you gifts for pledges of various levels, including a pair of fantastic seats to see Elton John at Amalie Arena on November 4th, a postponed show that's been sold out for a year. So there's that. There's also a week-long stay at the Kauai Condo, which just underwent a major renovation, plus signed copies of the coffee table book Pitbull Heroes, signed copies of the fantastic bird-centric CD There Are Birds we featured on the show a few weeks ago, and dazzling animal-oriented greeting cards created by 20-year-old artist on the spectrum Jared Edson. Details of all these exclusive thank you gifts and info on pledging and how you can do it can be found at talkinganimals.net. Right now, though, let's get to Aaron with the reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Aaron Greenwood back, triumphantly returning to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming, and so excited. Always enjoy speaking with you. And we've done this a number of times, both in short interviews and longer ones, and in studio and on the phone. But it's great to have you in studio. And again, we are streaming our conversation on Facebook Live on my own personal page for those who might want to check out what that looks like. So let's start with kind of what has become your day job, senior writer at Animal Legal Defense Fund. So what does that really mean? What does that entail?
Oh, it's a great job. The Animal Legal Defense Fund is an organization that works to get stronger legal protections for animals. When I was working as a journalist, they were one of my favorite sources because I could always count on them to be serious, to be doing really serious, no BS work that was really helping animals in the legal domain, in the courts, and by lobbying for stronger animal protection laws and better enforcement of those laws. I guess almost 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago or so, they approached me about coming on staff to join their communications team as a senior writer. And it would have been impossible to say no. It was really just a wonderful opportunity to join an organization I have been believed in for a long time and I'm very proud to be a part of.
So a couple things. One is, what does that involve? What do you do day to day as the senior writer there?
It's a very behind the scenes job, so I've gone from.
Oh, so you can't reveal any of your actual work, or
yeah. No, I can. Yeah. I can tell you the broad outlines of
okay.
it.
Okay.
You won't see my name on very much stuff, but I write. You know, all the materials that a nonprofit puts out, the external communications materials, so like press releases and newsletters and reports and all those sorts of things. I write a lot of those.
Now, senior writer suggests there might be another writer that's also working with you that's not quite as senior? Or it sounds like there's more than one person in that department. Is that just the title? Or
yeah, it's just a title. We're a pretty big department at this point. It's a surprising number of former attorneys who are...
I was just going to say, people may or may not remember if they've heard you on the show before, or just know generally that you are an attorney as well. Mm-hmm. So was that part of the calculus that the Animal Legal Defense Fund made, in addition, obviously, your illustrious writing career, but was that part of what figured into why they approached you for this particular job?
I think so. I mean, they knew me and I knew them through having reported on them. But yeah, I think the fact that I can read a lot of legal materials and understand what they mean and you know, hopefully I usually think of it as trying to translate law into English.
yeah, sometimes it's tough translation.
Yeah.
So, okay. And it's a job that you're enjoying.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I feel very lucky. This is my first time working in the nonprofit world. I've been an advocacy journalist before, and now I get to work on just straight advocacy. And it's I like it a lot. I hope we're doing a lot of good.
Cool. Yeah. So, and obviously, I guess part of that gig is that it involves mostly working at home.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I work remotely. A lot of our team is remote. It really, the magic of the internet.
Yeah. No, that's great. So, okay. So we'll come back to some of the other stuff that you're working on at the moment, like the book, et cetera. But let's talk about some stories and issues that are either of note or just have grabbed our fancy for kind of lighter reasons or whatever. But I think we almost have to start with this whole seizure of 300 some odd dogs that happened just in the last few days. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? And we can talk about where they've landed and what may or may not happen after that.
Yeah, it was apparently a puppy mill of some sort. The Hillsborough Pet Resource Center was able to seize more than 300 dogs from this puppy mill. They were evidently in very, very bad shape. They were being kept in just grossly inhumane conditions. One of the stories I read said there were 30 dogs in a cage that was meant to hold two. And when you saw the pictures of the conditions that the dogs were being kept in and what the dogs look like, I mean, it was, you know, I've been reporting on animal welfare and involved with animal welfare for a long time, and it's still just your breath catches in your throat, and I you know, you still cry. I feel like I'm tearing up even now just thinking about these pictures, just what these beautiful creatures endured because somebody wanted to make a profit off of them.
So as you're talking, it occurs to me, even though we've done a number of shows over the years about puppy mills, just for people who are listening who may not recognize that term, maybe you could just briefly describe what a puppy mill is.
Sure. Well, a puppy mill is sort of it's an evocative term, but it describes a commercial animal breeding facility, generally one where the animals are kept in worse than industry standard conditions, where they are kept in what law enforcement would understand to be inhumane conditions, what the general public would understand to be grossly inhumane conditions. So often the animals are kept in wire cages that are stacked one on top of the other. They're given no love. They're often not fed enough. They're often not given enough water. They don't have access to the outdoors. You know, they're treated as breeding machines, and then their puppies are sold for thousands of dollars to people who usually don't understand the conditions that the parents of these puppies are being kept in.
Yeah, well, an example of how inhumane those conditions are, what you decided about reading that at least in this place where they were just seized, that 30 or the 30 dogs were scrunched into a placement for two dogs.
Yeah.
So it's really, like many nefarious things, classically about the money. Yeah. So they're just trying to like breed as many dogs, get them out, get them sold. And the thing that's also important on the other end of it is where those dogs are made available. Mm-hmm. So in pet stores, classically, unwittingly in some cases, very wittingly in others, do take dogs from puppy mills and sell them. And then, of course, people who, for whatever reason, I don't know why anybody would be, would possess someone to buy a dog online, but of course, if you do that, chances are unless you have some other knowledge independently, that that's probably a puppy mill operation. You know, the website looks fabulous and idyllic and all those things. So
yeah, the websites are designed to trick you into thinking that you're getting a puppy who was raised in a happy home environment, but you know, these pictures show the truth.
Right. And then the other thing as it goes with that is then those dogs that are purchased from puppy mills often have, even when you first get them, or quickly develop illnesses of various mm-hmm. kinds. And then people are all up in arms. And then wherever you got them from suddenly can't be reached. And anyway, it's a bad situation really from every stage of the operation.
Yeah, but lucky for these animals, they are now in the loving hands of Hillsborough Pet Resource Center. And I know some rescue groups are also taking some of the more difficult ones now too. But even though it's a happy ending for these dogs, it's now put a lot of pressure on the shelter, which was already full.
Right.
So they are really trying to get people to come in and adopt and foster. If you're a rescue group that has any foster homes that are open, if you can pull some animals from the Pet Resource Center, I know they could really use the help.
Right, because the idea of 300, and it's really more than 300, I don't know the exact count.
Yeah, it's 340, I think.
Yeah. So better part of 350 or so being added to a place that was already pretty tapped out. So again, rescue groups, if you're someone who has fostered in the past or just was sort of thinking. Now again, I'm pretty sure these dogs probably need to be quarantined, some or all of them, for a certain period of time before they would be available. Or
Pet Resource Center said that I think it's a legal issue. For 30 days they have to hold on to the dogs. I think it's while the cruelty case is being, you know, makes its way through the legal system. So under state law they said they have to hold on to these dogs for 30 days, but it means that it's putting a lot of pressure on the shelter, which was already full.
Right.
You know, the dogs who are already there need some place to go.
Right. So if you're thinking of doing something, or again, if you can foster, you could come take the ones that were there before these seized dogs landed, and there those you could adopt or foster today.
Yeah. And I believe actually the shelter has eliminated adoption fees. I think they're really just trying to get as many of these animals into loving homes as they can right now and clear some space so that they have a little breathing room.
Now, an email just came in from someone who's got more of a historical sense about these kind of things than I do. This email writer says, there were over 400 dogs taken from the same place in 1999 mm-hmm. here in Tampa. Why does it take so long to prosecute these people which just do this over and over?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. One of the stories I was reading, I believe in the Tampa Bay Times, said actually the couple that's now been, the couple that had the dogs seized from them, they had they were banned from owning dogs in, I believe, 2011 and 2012. So there was a court order against them saying you can't own dogs anymore, but obviously they weren't following it. So, you know, these possession bans, they're called, are a very important tool to protect animals, but they also have to be enforced. And you know, resources have to be put toward enforcement as well as...
Is that kind of the age-old story, Aaron, of they were prohibited, but the enforcement issue is a whole different ballgame in terms of having enough resources to enforce any number of things, and people are just overwhelmed, and like, we get to what we can get, but these people obviously slip through.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't have any personal insight into the law enforcement side of this.
Right.
But that would be the usual.
But there's
story.
So many things in animals and animal welfare where there's just not enforcement, or it's sort of toothless laws or both. And so then that's unfortunately the answer to this emailer's question in a way is that, they were banned, but and then
here we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I just want to remind people, we're speaking with Aaron Greenwood, and we're happy to take your calls at 813-239-9666. You can email dj@wmnf.org, as that emailer just did, or you can text 813-433-0885. So we will talk about various issues, both local like this one, and there's actually another unfortunate dog case, fairly local as well, but to other national issues, things that you'd like to bring up, things you'd like to comment or add. If you know anything about some of the stories as we do get talking about them, we're happy to hear from you on those, and it can introduce some topics that maybe we should address that we might not otherwise have anticipated. There were some things that when Aaron put out a note about being on the show last night, there were some people who did weigh in, so we'll try to hit some of the things that people had suggested. So, but let's quickly at least get to the other. It's sad when a case that involves 75 animals is the minor case this week. So that's another cruelty case, and that's in Lake Butler, Florida, which I'm not that familiar with, but I guess, there was property that 75 animals that were neglected, et cetera.
Yeah, and the ASPCA, I believe, has taken in all of those animals.
Yeah, so I don't know where those animals have ended up.
I think they're in a temporary holding center now.
That's the sense I got, but I wasn't clear. And again, if anybody has any information on any of these things that you can add to the conversation, again, we welcome your calls at 813-239-9663. So, bad week in that way.
Yeah, it's a bit, well, I mean, on the one hand, it's a bad week. On the other hand, I mean, look at all these animals who are being pulled out of cruel conditions.
Right.
Look at all these incredible organizations that are stepping up to help them. And
sure.
Look at all these incredible people who are saying, yeah, now I'm going to support these organizations that are doing the hard work of rescuing animals who are being treated very cruelly and being given the opportunity now to have a good life.
Well, it's a worse week for people, animals like this that we don't know about
right. Yet.
Yeah, for sure.
So. Well, that's why it's so important. If you suspect animal cruelty, if there's a puppy mill near you, or if you see something that just raises your hackles, it's very important that you call the police, that you call the ASPCA, that you call your local shelter, that you document it. Don't try to rescue the animals yourselves. That can really impede a law enforcement investigation. But take pictures, you know, just make sure that you have alerted those who can help.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that this, I think, also reflects, at least the first story, if not the second, is that there was a time when puppy mills and similar operations were sort of thought of as being in certain regions of the country. Mm-hmm. And now it seems like at any given moment they could be anywhere.
Yeah, I think.
So again, it makes you feel like, geez, there's laws in place, sometimes maybe not forceful enough. And then again, the enforcement issue raises its head again. There's just so many of these operations. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, whack-a-mole, I guess, in a sense, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're an animal-loving country and more people are taking animals into their homes, and that provides new opportunities for people to try to make money off of exploiting animals. And so it's going to be a constant battle to try to prevent cruelty.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move into something more upbeat. From there, we can come back to some other things. But
thanks for having me, Duncan.
No, but I mean, I thought, okay, talk about the elephant in the room. If we didn't really start talking about those things, like what are these guys doing? Some sort of animal related show. And they didn't talk about kind of the biggest news story, because that's not just a big local story. That's kind of a regional, if not national story, really, with the 350 some odd dogs. So one of the things that I love about your Facebook page or feed is that you track a lot of shelter, cool things, innovative programs that shelters are doing to get dogs basically homes, in short. So what are some new creative new gambits that you've been aware of recently that shelters have employed that obstruct you and or that seem like they're effective?
One of my absolutely favorite things that has become this countrywide trend is Doggy Day Out, where more and more shelters across the country are letting volunteers come in just for an afternoon, and you pick up a dog and you take them out to have a spectacular afternoon. You take them for a hike, you take them out for ice cream, you take them just for a walk through the city. I recently ran into a couple of friends who had taken a dog out from one of our local shelters where I'm on the board, actually, Friends of Strays in St. Pete. They had taken a dog out and they were just taking her, she sat with them while they had brunch outside, and then they were taking her to meet one of their relatives to see if she would be a good match, if they wanted to adopt her. And these programs are just so fantastic. They are a win for everybody. They help get dogs a much-needed break from the shelter.
Right.
They get them some exercise. They get them some socialization. They get people more engaged with the shelter. They get the dogs... the dogs run into more people who might want to adopt them. I just think it's so wonderful. And it also helps show the community that shelters are not these sad places, but they're places where animals really have a chance and where you can, you know, you don't have to adopt. If you're not in a position to adopt or to foster, you can still be a part of that and you can still do some real good. And it's just, I just love it.
That is great, because it's, as you say, like, hey, we can't adopt at the moment. We can't even foster at the moment. But you could certainly next Sunday take a dog to brunch or just take them out for her out for those hours.
And the biggest problem that's come out of it is shelters are running out of dogs. And what a fantastic problem.
Oh, really?
To have. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You mean that have had their turn, you mean? Or?
No, that you show up to want to take a dog out for the afternoon and all the dogs are already checked
out.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
How great.
Yeah, that is a high-class problem.
That
is
a very high-class problem. So I wonder if there's any numbers so far on a given shelter, at least, if not overall, about how often that outing, that taking them to brunch or wherever they go that day, leads directly to an adoption. I wonder if there's any way to quantify that yet, or if, I mean, oh. some somebody's probably working on it, but
yeah, I'm sure somebody from Maddie's Fund is putting together, because Maddie's Fund is I don't know if you know Maddie's Fund. They're this wonderful nonprofit that they serve as a kind of educational clearinghouse. So they've got all kinds of information about best practices for shelters, but they also give a lot of grant funding, and they've put out a toolkit so that shelters can help start these programs. And I would imagine that they are putting together data on, you know, success stories from it. I know locally at Friends of Strays, the Holly Clare, the marketing person at Friends of Strays, who's just fabulous, she's the one who spearheaded the program there. And I believe she told me, if I'm remembering right, that every dog who's gone on a doggy day out has ended up getting adopted.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
if not that
huge
day,
percentage.
Then soon after
yeah.
that. And it's, yeah.
yeah. Well, even, I mean, that's remarkable, but even...
I might be exaggerating slightly.
I'm
Maybe
holding
Holly
you to this, Aaron. I'm very sorry.
Holly, if you're listening,
yeah,
call in.
Yeah, call in and clarify.
And if you're not listening, you should be.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we'll just say the number again right. for people who are listening. 813-239-9663. You can email if you'd rather not get on the phone at dj@wmnf.org. In fact, we did have an email that I'll read real quickly in a sec. Or you can just text from your phone to 813-433-0855. So 813-433-0855. So we did have an emailer, just clarifying when I probably said I wasn't quite sure where Lake Butler was. This emailer says near Gainesville, and then adds dozens of horses and emaciated dogs, husband and wife arrested. So very right. succinct kind of summary of that unfortunate case. So any other programs? I mean, sounds like that one's a huge winner with great numbers, even if it's not exactly the numbers as you would call them, but even if it's close to that, that's incredibly successful. Any other kind of innovative, cool things that shelters have been doing lately that have really caught your fancy?
I mean, there's a lot. Shelters are doing amazing things. One thing that just caught my eye last week was a shelter in Illinois, I believe, the Knox County Humane Society. They got famous about a year ago because they started putting comfy armchairs in their dogs' kennels, and just it delighted the heck out of everybody. So they recently texted me to let me know that they've started a new program where they're having a shelter staff member sleep overnight at the shelter. And this is, it surprised me when I first started covering shelters about 10 years ago now or whenever it was, that often they aren't staffed overnight. And you understand why. I mean, they're not really set up to have people sleeping there. They're for animals. But this shelter has decided that it's going to start having a staff member stay overnight every night for the safety of the animals, just in case there's a fire or anything like that. But also to help the dogs who are feeling a little bit nervous, a little bit anxious, who are a little lonely, so that they'll have company overnight. And it sort of makes them feel more like they're part of a family.
No, that's really cool. That reminds me of a story. I wish I could remember what shelter this was. But it almost doesn't matter because other people could do it too, which is that there was one dog, not just one, but in this instance, one dog that had been at the shelter like a long, long time. So a guy who didn't even work at the shelter, as I recall, he had some other unrelated job, but luckily it was flexible and worked at home or whatever. So he basically moved in with that dog just to kind of hang out, keep him company, sort of in the idea of like, I'm just going to hang here until you get adopted and just make things better, because that dog was really having trouble, as many dogs do with extended stay in a shelter. And darn if that dog didn't get adopted. I mean, I don't know how quickly it happened, but I just thought, that is super cool, because that guy just brought his laptop in and like a sleeping bag or a bed and just said, I'm hanging here until we find a home for this guy.
Yeah, that's Scott Poor in Kansas City.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Of course you would know and know the guy's name.
And the
name.
Dog,
of
I
course.
Believe, is Queenie. I think that's her name. And it's just, I mean, what a wonderful way to help. Just first of all, to just show your commitment to a dog, but also to just help that dog get some attention.
Right.
So that, you know, because there's just so many wonderful dogs in shelters all across the country, and any one of them would come into your home and be the absolute king or queen of the house, and you would love them so much. But when they're in a shelter, it's you know, they can blend in. Maybe they don't do so well in the kennel. Maybe for whatever reason, they just aren't standing out and they aren't catching any adopters' eyes. And something like this, just to highlight this dog who might otherwise not get any attention. It's wonderful.
Right. But that dog, of course, was lucky and worked out great. And Scott was able to do that. But that dog, of course, is a symbol for who knows how many dogs. And again, I don't think any dog enjoys hanging out and living in a shelter. But I think you know better than most that there are just certain dogs, for whatever set of reasons, their history, their makeup, whatever, that really struggle, especially if it gets to be longer and longer that they're there. So you really feel like if people can single those ones out and do that, take them out to brunch or whatever that program is, or do something or go sleep with them for, you know, as long as it takes to get attention to them. I mean, anything that kind of gets them out. I mean, they all need homes, but some are kind of more urgently because you can really start to see them fade.
Yeah. And well, it would be hard. I mean, they're, you know, dogs are sensitive. Animals are sensitive creatures. They have feelings. They respond to their environment. They're in a loud, scary, you know, a loud, scary environment without the comforts of home. And even the very best shelter can be very stressful. And that's why, that's one of the reasons why foster homes are so important. Because
it's a reprieve, much less stressful. If nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And plus, we always are pulling for those foster fails. But all right, let's take a
foster success, Duncan.
Right. Sorry. Okay. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Aaron Greenwood. Go ahead, please. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. I'm David Johnson.
Hi, David.
How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. How about you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Did you have a question or a comment for us?
Yeah. I believe I'm talking with the manager of that office. Am I right? Regarding cleaning service.
Okay.
And we're here to talk about animals. Do you have a dog, David?
You're on the air live at WMNF on a show called Talking Animals, and we're talking about various animal issues. So it sounds like you may have misdialed, but if you have a dog or an animal, we're happy to hear what you have to say.
Okay, yeah, we have a animal, like a pet.
Okay, great. A dog or a cat?
It's a cat.
Okay, cool. Well, before we go, can you tell us the cat's name? We must know.
Yeah. It's Angel.
Oh,
okay, great.
That's very sweet.
All right. Well, I'm sorry you missed dial, but sometimes things work out fortuitously. So thank you so much. Appreciate it, David. Thank
all
you.
Right, all right.
Bye, David.
So, okay. Well, that's the thing. Sometimes even accidental call leads to an animal conversation. So we have an email from Don Goldstein, our longtime Greyhound correspondent. He says, one long-term solution to puppy mills is banning the commercial of puppies. I think there's a word that may have gotten bobbled there, except by registered breeders. There are over 60 such local ordinances in Florida, and most large-scale pet stores no longer sell puppies other than those from rescue shelters. So,
yeah, that's great. What Don is referring to is called a retail pet sale ban, and those are becoming much, much more common. We've got two states now with statewide retail pet sale bans. That's California and Maryland. A bunch of other states are considering them now, and there's hundreds of cities and counties across the country now that ban the sale of commercially bred cats, dogs, and sometimes rabbits and other animals too, and instead require pet stores to sell animals that come from shelters and rescue groups, legitimate nonprofit rescue groups. And I think it's a great way to promote the bringing shelter pets into your home and to try to stem and staunch the sale of puppy mill animals and to try to put a hold on puppy mills more generally.
All right, we're going to read an email. Actually, amongst the many things that people suggested when Aaron put a call out on Facebook last night for some topics for us to discuss, so I want to mention one now and come back to it, especially if anybody responds to this, because one of the things that came up says, since you're in Florida, how about the terrible situation at Miami-Dade Animal Services, so many dogs being euthanized? I personally don't know enough about that to probably comment effectively, but if anybody listening does, either by phone or email or text. Again, the phone number is 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. We can come back to that, but I think in the absence of more information from someone who lives there or has volunteered there or knows the situation, we'd be sort of not in a great position to comment on that. Also, that came up in that sort of string of people responding to Aaron's request for possible topics is saying that if someone is so determined to get a quote-unquote pure breed, check rescues and shelters. I think that's a super important point, right? Because sometimes people get hung up on, I must have this kind of breed, or my kid only wants this kind, and so I have to buy them. No.
Yeah, I mean, look, as this puppy mill bust in Hillsborough County shows, there are purebred dogs who end up in shelters and who end up in rescue. And they're not always from puppy mill busts. I mean, there's breed-specific rescue groups. Like in Florida, we have a lot of Great Pyrenees rescue groups. I don't know why that is, but we have all these polar bear-like dogs here in Florida. And if you like Great Pyrenees, you will not have a hard time finding one to adopt here. There's greyhound-specific rescue groups. I know of somebody in Texas who runs a rescue group for Westies. And all of these dogs who you might think you need to go to a breeder for, you can actually find and rescue. It's not always that. I mean, it's, you know, you might not find the 6-week-old, 9-week, 12-week-old puppy that you wanted to buy, but you will find a dog. You know, if you are determined to get a dog who is a specific breed, there are rescue groups that are there to help you adopt one.
Absolutely. And sometimes, in addition to that, I think Pet Finder, sometimes you can find, depending on how broad your search is, I guess, and how geographically far you're willing to go, you can find that specific breed if you need to have a specific breed for some reason. But there's always ways to do it where you could adopt it rather than buy it. And we've got some other people weighing in, kind of, I think, underscoring some of our point here about recommending that listeners adopt from shelters rather than purchase from breeders. So I think we're kind of saying the same thing.
Although I'd like to make another point about Pet Finder. Pet Finder, I think as of about a year ago, introduced this wonderful new search function where previously you had to search Pet Finder. In case people don't know, Pet Finder is kind of the major search engine for finding adoptable. It's a major database search engine. It's
right.
It's where you find adoptable pets.
It's like a dating app in a sense, right?
It's like a dating app for pets.
Yeah.
But up until about a year, I think about a year ago, you had to search by breed, which kind of reinforced the idea that you wanted specific breeds and blah, blah. But as of about a year ago, they started letting you search for mixed breed dogs. And now you can search for mixed breed dogs, but then you can search for specific personality traits also. So this will help you make a good match rather than having to go by, you know, you can search for a dog who's good with kids, who's good with other cats, who's energetic, who's, you know, likes to sleep on the couch. They have all these great ways to look for a pet who's going to be a good match for your family.
Yeah, that gets more and more specific and again, makes it more and more likely that dog that you end up with will be...
Yeah, the perfect fit for you.
Right, yeah. So just a couple of follow-ups. One from Suzanne from Florida Voices for Animals said, we tried for 2 years to get our Board of County Commissioners to pass an ordinance for pet stores to work with rescues, but our county commissioners failed us and the animals in not passing it. So sometimes those things do come up.
It takes a long time.
Yeah, and you got to kind of keep coming back. And in many places they have passed, and many places they're not passed yet, but inroads are being made. So
yeah, it's a marathon. I mean, it's a marathon. Yeah. And I think as more and more communities, and we're getting more and more communities in Florida that are passing these kinds of ordinances, I think new counties will become more receptive to passing them as well. But you have to keep having those meetings, keep working on the advocacy side of it.
Yeah. And so one of our other emailers was asking if you knew of pet stores still in malls. And that, I think, varies a lot about where the mall
Do
is.
Do you know malls anymore?
Well, that's a good point. But, I mean, stores anywhere, a strip mall, wherever it might be. But that's going to be largely determined by what the ordinances are in place there or if there are. And so
we still have some around here. I mean, it's... We're not done with these things yet.
Yeah. So again, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Aaron Greenwood, senior writer at Animal Legal Defense Fund, but former animal journalist and animal welfare editor at Huffington Post, so super steeped in all kinds of animal issues and particular interest in shelters, but also just a particular interest in petting dogs that she sees walking by, including Charlie, the dog here that we have at WMNF on Wednesdays. So anyway, we're happy to have your input on stuff we're discussing, or if you'd like to suggest a topic that we should address, 813-239-9663, dj@WMNF.org if you'd like to email instead, or you can text 813-433-0885. And we are streaming this conversation on Facebook Live on my personal page, Duncan Strauss on Facebook, if you want to check out what the conversation looks like. Let's talk a little bit slightly different kind of thing, which is airlines and traveling with animals on airlines. Okay, well, there's something very recent that's just popped up on that I felt like, again, we'd be remiss if we didn't briefly, perhaps, examine. So Delta Airlines.
Yeah, or you're going to make me furious. Well, I'm steaming
through
my ears now.
Believe me, I typically fly Delta, so I'm like in a huge dilemma here. So
So Delta announced, I can't even remember when they announced it. It was some time ago they announced that they were no longer allowing pit bulls on board, including as service dogs or as support dogs. So this was obviously a terrible move for them to make. And in August, the Department of Transportation released a memo saying airlines should not discriminate against dogs by breed. And I read that. I mean, I'm a former lawyer. I read this memo. I did not read it to be a voluntary sort of a thing that the Department of Transportation was saying, but apparently Delta read it as being voluntary because they announced this week that they're still not allowing pit bulls on board, even as service dogs or as support dogs. And they released some just absolutely spurious and made-up statistics about, you know, dog bites and safety to justify why they've implemented and are continuing to enforce this discriminatory and, I think, you know, illegal, contrary to law, rule. But here we are. I expect there will be lawsuits over this.
Right. So that was one of my questions, especially given your background as a lawyer, is will this indeed lead to a legal challenge? I would think that it would.
I would think so.
Because related to that, and we've covered this many times on this show, including sometimes with you, is that even the idea of breed-specific legislation and things that go with that, I mean, determining what a pit bull even is the most slippery of tasks to begin with. So how do you say, well, that dog can't go on Delta and this dog over here can? I mean, right off the bat.
Let me just give you one example. So I know people who are not steeped in kind of the dog world and the pit bull advocacy world find this incredibly confusing and find it very frustrating to hear. But here we are. So, you know, the term pit bull is sort of a general bucket that refers to dogs who look a specific way. Some dogs are a type of terrier, a Staffordshire Terrier or an American Pit Bull Terrier. Some dogs are not. They just happen to have a blocky head. And, you know, and the dogs who are affected by these pit bull bans, like the one that Delta is has decided to enforce, enact and enforce, you can't say who is going to be affected by it. And just to give you one example of how arbitrary this is, my dog Murray, who was listed on Petfinder 10 years ago when we adopted him as a border collie, and we're sure that's the one thing he's not. But, you know, he's a mixed breed dog.
Yeah.
He used to be about 10 pounds heavier because of a thyroid condition, and his face looked blockier, and people thought he was a pit bull then. We now have him on thyroid meds, and he's slimmed down, and nobody thinks he's a pit bull anymore. So this is how kind of arbitrary the pit bull designation is. It's, you know, do you look at a dog and does that dog strike you as having a head that's blocky enough that makes them a pit bull? And that should help tell you how nonsensical it is to try to regulate dogs by head shape like that.
As you're telling the Murray story, that reminds me, and you're going to have to help me with the name of the organization. There's a really organization that's doing devoted to pit bull awareness and stuff, but it doesn't have pit bull in the name. It's like
Animal Farm Foundation.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So I was at a conference many years ago. I've told the story a few times over the years because, again, it underscores exactly, I think, what we're talking about. And one of the presentations was by the president or executive director. And she did like a PowerPoint thing and just showed slides of different dogs. And the idea was you were supposed to identify, is that a pit bull or is that not a pit bull? And one of the things that stayed with me, and this was, again, like many years ago now. So one of the slides that went up was, it looked to me like, looked like our yellow lab. And she said, that has more pit in it than the previous dog that looked totally classically pit. So I just thought, okay, this in two slides made it clear that nobody can really identify.
Nobody can identify, and it doesn't make any sense to try to. You should regulate dogs by their behavior, not by what they look like or their breed.
Which is, again, gets us into a whole other long conversation about breed-specific legislation and all those things. But some of those are being repealed, which you dutifully report or share on Facebook. Okay, we got some
calls. Well, and actually, let me plug while we're here.
Please.
You have you mentioned that you're at your fundraiser, you've got a copy of Pitbull Heroes by Greg Murray. That is a wonderful book.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely wonderful book.
We should just briefly say it's sort of a coffee table book. He's a photographer,
a
great photographer.
He's just a beautiful photographer. Yeah. The stories are beautiful.
Yeah, so it's basically dogs, Pitbull type dogs that have overcome adversity of one kind or sort of a tough story to be triumphant one way or another. And they're working for the police department and sniffing things.
They're just being great pets.
There's all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I do have two of those that he was nice enough to donate for the fund drive. So thanks for bringing that up. Okay, so we're unfortunately starting to run out of time. I want to get at least one of our callers here on. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Aaron Greenwood.
Yeah, hey, thanks for the interesting discussion. I come from a place of advocacy for native animals, and I would just ask all pet advocates to consider the impacts that their pets have on native species, first of all, and other species. Cats and dogs are not vegan, and there's a huge factory farming industry to feed cats and dogs, which tortures other animals. Plus, when I'm out on the beaches and I see helper dogs chasing birds or when I see cats eating birds, and I talk to the pet owners, and they just don't care. So I would ask everyone who loves their dogs and cats, also love native species and cows and chickens and all the other animals used to feed your pets, and think about pet ownership from that perspective.
That's a really good point.
I think the interactions between cats and native species, which is probably saved for another conversation, but this idea of do you torture animals in order to feed your pets, you know, and how factory farming fits in with pets, I think is such an important and kind of under-examined issue as yet. I know there's a move toward feeding. Well, this is just me speaking on my own and a little bit off the top of my head. This is not something I've thought through completely yet. But my first instinct about this is that, you know, while we have factory farming and people are consuming parts of the animals that are factory farmed, there's still a lot of byproducts that humans won't eat, and a lot of those go into pet food. And so I'm very ambivalent about this move to feed animals human grade meat, because I do think that that probably increases the amount of factory farming, you know, in order to feed pets. And I think there is something kind of perverse about harming some animals to protect others. But I think most commercial pet food is made of this. Again, I have not researched this thoroughly, but this is what I think, that most commercial grade pet food is made from animal byproducts. So we're not directly harming more animals in order to feed our pets when we use those. But I think this is an issue that we need to start really thinking about, you know, as we come to treat our pets as family and as we care more and more about more animals broadly, I do think that we have to think about how we treat some in order to care for others.
All right. And for that, so we're running out of time. I'm going to quickly read one email because this got forwarded. I think she sent it and thought I didn't read it, but I haven't been able to read them all. But I appreciate all the emails and calls that we're getting, and unfortunately we're about to run out of time, so I'm sorry we're not going to get to every single one. But this one says, I've worked for Show Dog up to Westminster Breeders. Kennels clean, but retirees, bred, stacked, ignored, no love. And then the next thing I think said, and vocal cords cut.
Ugh.
So sounds a bit rough. So let's take at least one more call. One of the many things we're not going to get to, I guess, today is there was quite a piece in the Washington Post about Michael Vick dogs.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story.
Yeah, super amazing thing.
Go read it.
And the story behind that. And there's also a story in the Washington Post that we're not going to get to, I think, today, but all about the huge diminishing population of birds. And it's really a in-depth look and recommend seeing that online if you didn't.
Well, I think we can quickly give the kind of nut of the bird story, which is they're dying in just incredible numbers, and it's thought to be because of habitat loss and pesticide use. So make conscientious choices about, you know, where you live and what you do with your lawn and what you eat, because these are important.
Which sort of ties into what our caller was saying, is like, just think more about the impact that you're having either on other animals or the environment, et cetera. So let's try to take one more call at least. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Aaron Greenwood. Hello, it's you. Go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering if Aaron has any recommendations for any fundraisers or events coming up for local animal welfare groups that we can get behind in the Tampa St. Pete area?
Well, it's funny you ask. The shelter that I'm on the board of, Friends of Strays, is having its big annual event coming up on October 12th. It's called Wags and Whiskers. This year's theme is the Great Catsby.
okay.
You can see who we're aiming at. It's going to be a really fun event with a lot of good prizes that you can bid on, good food, good company, and supporting a really good shelter. Friends of Strays is doing very good work. I'm very proud to be a part of it.
Awesome.
So it's
thank you.
October 12th, Wags and Whiskers. You can buy tickets online if you go to the Friends of Strays website.
Yeah, you could probably find all those details at friendsofstrays.org. Okay, thanks for your call. That's great. So one of our emailers just wrote in, I think apropos of what you just said, Aaron, says you can find vegan pet foods at local pet supply stores or on Amazon. So we're going to take one more quick call, if you can keep it brief. You are on Talking Animals with Aaron Greenwood. Hello, it's you.
Good morning.
Hi, just a quick comment or question. We're sort of over time here, but I want to get one more.
My first home I ever bought, I had to get homeowner's insurance, of course. Well, 2 weeks after I got my homeowner's insurance, apparently the insurance company drove by my house and saw my Chinese Sharpeis and quickly informed me in a form letter that they don't insure homeowners with pit bulls, at which point I brought in my AKC papers and they still dropped me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that terrible? And it shows you, again, how arbitrary this pit bull designation is and how it makes no sense whatsoever to create regulations or rules that are based on that designation. But but also how hard it is for people with dogs to find good insurance. State Farm is one company I know of that doesn't discriminate against dogs by breed. They'll insure dogs. They'll insure your home with any breed of dog there. They look at behavior, not breed. And I'd love to find out about others. I'm easy to find online if you want to get in touch with me and let me know about others.
Thank you for your call.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm afraid we are out of time, maybe even slightly over time, but we've been speaking with Erin Greenwood. Again, if you aren't already, go to her Facebook page, go anywhere else. Of course, her day job, ostensibly, is at the Animal Legal Defense Fund. I don't say ostensibly.
Yeah,
I just mean...
That?
No, but I just mean...
Duncan, do you have something to tell me?
No, but I just mean all the great posts
like
and shares on Facebook. And then she's writing a book currently, which we didn't even get to, but we'll get to it, especially if not before, when the book comes out. And anyway, so I just really appreciate Erin, you coming in and joining us and giving us all kinds of cool knowledge and insights on various animal welfare issues.
Well, thank you for having me again. It was great.
Thank you. So anyways, this is Talking Animals. In a few moments, I'll speak with Asia Nakia about the organization she founded, Compassion Kind, which has been rescuing and relocating animals in Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria and in the Bahamas after Dorian's crushing blow. There's a documentary showcasing Compassion Kind work in Puerto Rico, part of a double feature screening coming up October 5th. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a comic making his debut on this show today. I love this guy. This is Brian Simpson with a piece I'm calling Missing Pets in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Yeah. I don't help people when their pets go missing. No. When I see one of those signs and it's like lost dog, I'm like, all right, that's one side of the story. Yeah. You're using the word lost, but what if I asked the dog, maybe he escaped? You know? Those people want you to think their dog's biggest problem is it can't find them. But I saw this documentary, it turns out the average canine can recognize a familiar scent for up to 13 miles. For up to 48 hours. So maybe your dog know exactly where you are. Yeah. You just can't handle the fact that he chose the streets.
That was Brian Simpson with a piece I'm calling Missing Pets, taken from his appearance last week on Lights Out with David Spade. Now let's speak to Asia Nakia about her organization, Compassion Kind, an imminent documentary screening, and more. This is Asia Nakia on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Asia.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thanks for having me.
So let's first hear at least the quick overview version of what Compassion Kind is and what it does.
Sure. We focus on marginalized communities of people and animals that are suffering. So we work mostly in disaster areas, third world countries, and also locally in the U.S. when disasters strike.
So an example that I've alluded to earlier would be Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria.
Yes, we worked right after Hurricane Maria, mostly on people and animals that were displaced and dropping off supplies. We did a lot of search and rescue the first few weeks, and then we ended up opening a small animal shelter here to help with the stray crisis on the island.
And how is that going at this point, would you say, Asia?
It's great. Just very busy. There's no limit of strays here.
Right. And then I think you guys similarly kind of descended on the Bahamas after Dorian wreaked havoc, correct?
Yes. We are still in the Bahamas now. We are working in Marsh Harbor and Freeport, which are two of the most affected areas from Dorian.
So on a kind of related note, more to the Puerto Rico side of things than the Bahamas side of things, is this documentary. Give us a little idea about what that is and then the screening coming up in the first part of October.
Sure, yes. We are very excited about the screening. It's October 5th in Tampa, Florida. And we created this film because of all of the stray animals that were left after Hurricane Maria. And it was sort of an afterthought. We had already been working on the island for about 6 months, but we really wanted to tell the story of six women on the island that met in unforeseen circumstances under complete chaos that really came together to create this unbelievable force on the island rescuing these animals. So the documentary is about these six bold and compassionate women and their struggles and their amazing personalities and how they come together to really make an impact here.
Wow. And I guess more specifically, we should say that that's one of two documentaries that's being screened, you said, October 5th, but it's at Jimmy B. Kiel Regional Library in right here in Tampa. And that screening is what we like to say, unticketed. So kind of two films for the same night and couldn't be a more reasonable ticket price. So we definitely want to catch that. Anything else that we should know that you're working on or that's on the horizon for Compassion Kind or otherwise?
I mean, we certainly have a lot going on, but we will be in the Bahamas indefinitely. So definitely look out for more animal rescues and hopefully a small shelter in Marsh Harbor as well.
Okay, cool. And what kind of online presence does Compassion Kind have for people who want to find out more about the organization and maybe as they find out, maybe support your efforts in one way or another?
Sure, yes. We have our website, CompassionKind.org. You can also find us on all social media platforms, especially Facebook and Instagram, by looking up Compassion Kind. And we are always looking for help with fosters locally in the Tampa Bay area and all over the U.S., really. Especially in disaster zones.
Cool. All right, Asia. Well, thank you so much for all your great work, and thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals to fill us in a little bit about that work.
All right. Thank you all.
Okay. Take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Rob Loray is up next with Radioactivity, and then in the noon hour, it's Midpoint with Nola Lalay. I'll be back here next week alongside my longtime pitching partner, Laura Taylor, seeking to raise money on Talking Animals as part of the first morning of WMNF's Fall Fundraiser. Please support Talking Animals with an early pledge. Go to talkinganimals.net to find out about all our great thank you gifts that are exclusive to Talking Animals and ways you can pledge very simply and easily. It takes a minute or two, and we'll hope to hear from you then, if not before. So it's Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. NPR News headlines followed by Rob Loray. Thanks.